So hi and welcome to the next episode of the Foss North Pod. Today we have Alex with us. So could you please start by telling us a bit about yourself? Why are you here?
I'm here. I don't know. There was my mother and father once met. I don't know. I'm Alex. I work on Linux stuff. I've been at Red Hat for the last 20 years or so, doing desktop work. The last 4 or 5 years, I've been working on Flatpak, which is why I'm here to talk about that. But I have a very long history in open source, and I've been Linux user since 1994 or something. And
how did you get started?
Like everything?
Yeah, I don't know. We don't have to go back to mom and dad, but
yeah, I don't know. I guess it started in school when I was in high school. I went to a special school where they had Sun workstations that we were using, and I was like, I really wanted to have a Linux at home, so or a Unix, I guess. I wanted a Solaris or SunOS back then, but I found Linux instead, and did my own Linux, and then went on from there, from just using it to eventually being a developer using.
So you missed the CD that got you started with GNOME.
Oh no, it was all floppies back then. Yeah, it's bike to school and get the Emacs series of floppies, and 14 floppies, and install at home. Yeah,
one of them is broken, and you have to bicycle back.
I used to have two of everyone, so I had a backup.
I think I have them. No, they're out of picture. I have my floppy boxes here, but I have an unopened HD double density pack.
Yeah. Those are going to be worth a lot of money.
It's 14 megabytes. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I used to think that the commands to write to the floppy was so hard to learn. So I used cat to dev FD0, I think it was, on the Solaris.
Instead of DD?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It worked.
I guess it works. Yep. DD is mainly useful for tar or archives, tapes anyway. I think cat is fine for a device like a floppy.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I guess my initial entrance into the GNOME world was I wrote this tool called Dia, or how you want to pronounce it. It's this GTK app for diagramming stuff that I did as part of wanting to do diagrams in some university level UML course or something. So didn't have anything like that, so I wrote that one, and then I kind of got into the whole GNOME world.
Attended. And then we're talking late 90s or something like that. Or
yeah, 1999. I went to the first GUADEC, the GNOME conference, in 2000. That's where I met a lot of the people first. And then I worked on a couple of years doing embedded Linux in a company in Linköping. But then I got hired by Red Hat 2000. And since then, I've been basically at the desktop team at Red Hat doing. I was the Nullis maintainer for a while. I was part of the initial work on the GTK2 dbus. I've been doing a lot of work on GTK. Did the Broadway backend for GTK, and eventually ended up doing a bunch of work on Docker, also, as well as Flatpak and other similar application distribution systems.
Yeah, I guess Flatpak is your baby, even. I mean, you started this XDG app back in the
when
C groups and the namespacing and everything sort of became available to some extent.
Yeah, and XDG app is basically Flatpak with the older name. But even before that, I was working on a similar patching system, but that were more experimental. I think everything caught up when enough technology was robust, to do Docker and Flatpak and all that kind of stuff.
But so Flatpak is sort of an application container, to isolate and run applications separately, and it's also a distribution format, and you have the Flatpak hub. Could you do like a whirlwind tour of what it is and what you need?
So it's an application distribution and deployment system, meaning it's both a way to download the app and dependencies and whatnot and keeping it updated, as well as running it locally. Like it's a runtime environment for an application that looks the same independent on what kind of distribution you run it on, right? So from the app point of view, it exposes a standardized layout for the environment that you can work in, and from the side of the host operating system, it also is a standardized. You can run Flatpak this thing, and it looks like a regular process. So it kind of sits in between and acts as a container, but something that isolates the application from the host. And the isolation is, some people focus on the security aspect of isolation. It's definitely important. I mean, the fact that Flatpak has a sandbox that long-term allows us to have a very secure system where the applications aren't necessarily allowed to access other apps or host system data. But isolation is also what's making it possible to run the same app on many systems. Like it's both a security thing and an implementation detail in how we actually do containers.
But it sounds as if you're saying that the distribution problem is the primary problem that you try to solve. And having isolation is something that you need to be able to do that, because you need to run the applications in sort of various runtime environments.
So the primary problem I'm trying to solve is on a much larger scale. Like if you are a free software developer working on something that you want your users or some users to use, the goal of Flatpak is to make that an experience that works, right? You should be in control of getting your app to the user. And the feedback you get from users should be for the thing you put out there at the time you choose to put it out. That's the top level goal of Flatpak too. Because in the current system, that's not how it works. There's always an intermediate. A lot of people like think that the distros do a lot of good work in actually packaging and stuff. And it's not entirely wrong that they help a lot in packaging stuff, but it's also a point of failure for the developer to interact with the users, right? It takes forever until it's picked up and they choose to package it the wrong way, or they're arbitrary freezing dependencies. So the goal of Flatpak is to kind of kickstart the community around producing desktop applications that like work, that compete with other platform systems, instead of being stuck in like the distro world.
Where would you say the distros start and end, and sort of ideally? Because right now, I mean, it is a problem that you might sort of get bugs for Dia reported into Debian's systems, and you as a developer sort of need to figure out all the sources of information and stuff like that. But does it mean that distros in the end is something that you envision will disappear?
I think the opposite is true. I think the fact that to be a viable distribution today, you have to package the world, being every fringe. Like if you want to use a distribution, it better have the apps you want, and everyone wants different apps. Thus, for a distribution to be viable, it has to package everything. And that's just fundamentally not a very interesting thing to be in the business of packaging everything. I mean, we should have, like, the less people that have to spend all the time packaging everything, the more they can focus on interesting stuff, such as, like, a distribution can be so much. Like, you can do so many cool new things to create a new distro. But it's hampered by the fact that to do a distro, you have to start by packaging 50,000 apps. So the only thing you can run is Debian, Ubuntu, or I mean, there are other things. But basically, you have to have this massive projects to recompile the world when what you really wanted to do was, you know, have some new ID or integrate with the desktop in a new way or whatever. Like there's so much focus on packaging application that I think is shouldn't be the thing that distributions are interested in.
So it's of course the trust issue here. So if I download, by the way, what are the packages called? Are they called Flatpaks?
Yeah, that's really not a great terminology. I call them Flatpaks because that's really a better way. So there's runtimes and apps, but it would be like Flatpaks.
Yeah, so the how do I trust a package? Can I, like, is it a verification?
Trust, in what sense do you want to trust it? That it is what it is, or that it doesn't do something?
That it doesn't tamper with my hardware or other softwares.
But because there's a different thing, right? Do you trust that it's, if it claims to be Minecraft, that do you trust that it is Minecraft and not someone else re-implementing it?
I'm too old to play games, but I do get your question. but if I do a download or install from Red Hat, Fedora, Debian, or what have you, then I've sort of made a choice that I trust you guys to do this.
Yeah.
So is there a similar way be to use the Flatpak hub?
Yeah, so Flatpak is intentionally not really tied to a specific ecosystem. I think it's important that everyone is on like the same on a level playing where you can compete. If you want to have your own distribution mechanism, if you want to ship your app on your servers, you should be completely fine with that. However, everyone, like, that's kind of the old Windows style where you have to hunt for installers on different websites. It's not really a great, like, end user experience. So in order to make the experience better, we do have this thing called Flat Hub, which is a central for Flatpaks. So we're trying to make it be like the main place where you find open source stuff, but it's not necessarily the only one. And it's, in fact, it's not even installed by default in most distributions packaging of Flatpak. So it's something you have to click on a file to install. Basically add something like an apt repo or a JUM repo. But once you have it, yes, you sort of trust that everything is on there. Like you trust the packages that we let push packages to FlatHub, which in a sense is the same level of trust that you'd grant a distribution.
Yeah,
but how is Flatpak set up then? Is it like, do you use something like, I'm thinking F-Droid, for instance, where what you trust is that the source is the correct source, or do you actually do some additional checks and balances before you're allowed to put your app in there?
Looking from the side of FlatHub as an organization, we have an initial review. Like if you publish a new app, it has to pass the review. But once that is in there, we don't actually track what you do. And so even if, like, we have there's some kind of review on the initial package, then you are basically the maintainer, such as you would be of a Debian package, and we don't look at whatever, like, updates, adds, and changes.
I mean, it's quite similar to what the major app stores does, or for instance, Android. It takes a while the first time, and then they do their
FDroid. More like FDroid, I think.
Yeah, because Android actually do, like, I think they run some kind of CI on every
new. Yeah, they test that the app starts and that it hasn't changed too much. But it's only the first review that takes a couple of weeks, and then you can push instantly, basically.
Yeah, so it's not very dissimilar from that.
But if I want to get started, let's say that I have an app and I want to deploy it and package it and sort of close the loop, where do I start? I need a development environment, I guess, or some sort of runtime to build against.
So the first thing you have to do is packet your app as a Flatpak. And the first thing you do when you want to packet something is pick what runtime it's supposed to be based on. Runtimes are something that Flatpak has that supply the basic stuff your application needs. So it's shared between many different applications, both like shared in terms of there's a single copy of it, but it's also like there's a separate project that shares maintenance of this thing so that not everyone has to do like the boring work on glibc updates and whatnot. But you have to pick which runtime to use, and normally what makes most sense is to pick either the KDE or the GNOME runtime. Both of those are based on top of a common platform. So if your application is not very high level, like a game, you might want to use the base platform runtime too, which is called Free Desktop SDK. There are other runtimes also. Like we're working on a RHEL-based one, and there's a Fedora one. But those are, at least the Fedora one, is really more about reusing existing Fedora RPMs than it is about packaging a third-party application. There is some interest in making the RHEL ones be like a long-term supported, 50 years of stability guaranteed, which is very dissimilar from the Free Desktop one. Although, you know, as always, when you have stable things, you know, it's stable for 15 years, but, you know, it's got to be pretty old after 15 years.
Yeah.
So for upstream things, I think it makes a lot more sense to be based on upstream projects like Free Desktop or its derivatives. So once you pick which one you want to use, they come with an SDK, which is basically the runtime plus all the develop packages and the compilers and the debuggers and all the tools you need to do development. So you don't really need to have any development tools on your machine. In fact, it's really nice that you don't have, because then everyone, like if you're multiple people working on the same project, you all will automatically be using the same build tools. And if it gets built on FlatHub, it's built using the same compiler as you. So there's no difference in environment messing up with testing and stuff. So once you pick that, you write a manifest. So there's a Flatpak builder. It's a tool that builds Flatpaks. There are other ways, but that's the most common way. And you basically specify the SDK, and then it's basically a list of URLs for the tarballs or the Git repositories and how to build them. So it's quite similar to any kind of packaging, with the main difference being that the end result is a single thing, whereas if you were packaging things, there is a tendency to break everything up into separate packages for everything.
As you don't build your docs separate from your main program,
well,
so to speak.
Well, if you depend on some library that is not part of the runtime, that gets into the manifest that builds the app rather than a separate, you know, RPM or dev for that library or something. But in practice, there's not a lot of dependencies, as most of the core stuff necessary for desktop apps are in the runtime.
So it's more if you have an app, like a bad example, libSpotify or something like that
you want to integrate like in your. Yeah. Yeah.
From a compliance point of view, I'm interested. So for example, Docker is a pain in the butt. If I ship like a vanilla Ubuntu, I'm also distributing all these packages. So there's a lot of like problems with that. So is that something you've looked into in Flatpak? Basically, can I get the copyright for all the dependencies in there? Can I get the copyright holders, the license texts?
No, there's no tracking of that. No, I mean there is, in the sense that the Free Desktop people, like the Free Desktop SDK developers, do track licenses and stuff, but there's no built-in tooling to consume it.
But I can potentially list the packages in a Flatpak?
No. You can look at the manifest and see what got built.
Uh-huh.
So you end up...
That,
So it's more like an archive of the build. There's not a lot of metadata about stuff that went into the build.
So I guess it's very similar then to building, well, an Android and iOS app, where you yourself as an app developer is responsible for sort of showing in a prominent place whatever the license assists, the copyright of your dependencies. So yeah. And your do you have like an envelope license for the package itself, or it's not something that's relevant really?
No, there's no currently. Well, there is the AppStream data, which can list JSON. Which can list the JSON file that can list. No, actually, the XML that can list licenses. But there's no tooling that like automatically generates that from the source. And it's actually somewhat complicated because AppStreams or in general. Tooling in the free software community is based on this package perspective. So something like an app stream, which describes an application or describes a module, would have a license field and a version field and whatnot, which would be all right if you were describing the Leaf package or the Leaf RPM or like the Spotify RPM. But actually, when it's describing the entire app that has some things bundled in it, the semantics isn't quite there anymore. Like, what is the license? What is the license field applied to? Is it?
Yeah, exactly. Like, because you're doing things? Almost a mini distro, almost like a subset of a distro. So it's a license of a bundle of packages.
Yeah.
And you need to know how they are combined, blah blah blah. Yeah. So it's okay.
And okay, like the version, like if you have a version this of Spotify and it uses some version of libjson or libspotify or whatever, how do you encode the combined version? There's really no way to do that. So some of the tooling is kind of focused on the traditional packaging way.
But that's interesting. I mean, if another aspect to it is really if you build a flat pack, I guess you as a developer then is the one doing the distribution technically, even though it goes over flat hub.
Yeah.
And then they're into gray zone. But
yeah,
so, I mean, who's responsible for keeping the sources up there? And I guess if you put an LGPL library into a flat pack, which is a binary distribution format, you're technically responsible then for sharing all the information that your users can regenerate the package with that.
I mean, we do kind of automatically produce source version, like everything that when we're building a manifest, we collect the sources that was used for that build automatically on FlatHub. But there's no guarantee. Like, you could easily have a manifest that just lists a binary, and we don't have the sources for that. So fundamentally, it's up to the end user that submits something to FlatHub, and from a legal point of view, that's kind of our standpoint, that we just act as a way to distribute, you know, like Reddit or whatever. You get to stand for what you put in there, and if someone comes to us and says this actually contains something that is problematic or something we have copyright for or just is illegal or whatever, then we will just delete it and say, well, we are just distributing someone else's work.
Yeah.
Because as an organization, like Flatpak is, FlatHub cannot take the responsibility for everything. They just...
Yeah, and I mean, if you don't do it that way, you run into the same scaling problem as a distro, I guess, because then you have to do all the work.
And actually, we want... What we ideally want is for the actual application upstream maintainers to own their own things in Flatpak, in FlatHub. I mean, if someone wants to package someone else's app, that's currently allowed, but we prefer the actual upstream maintainer to do it. And if there's any kind of conflict, we always party with the upstream maintainer.
So it's about getting closer or bringing the gap between the user and the upstream developer closer, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm curious here. So was there a specific moment a couple of years ago when you finally had it? I'm so tired of this dependency issue. So I'm going to write flat back.
No, not really. I mean, I've been since I've been at Red Hat for 20 years. I've been in the distribution business and the packaging business for a long time. I know all about the problems it has. So I've always been, I always knew the problems. But it was more of a technical interest initially. I wrote a tool called Glick, which is kind of a pun on click, which was an earlier one file install. You download a single click file and run it. And Glick is similar, but used some other, which were then cutting edge kernel technologies to implement containers. And over time, I kind of had an interest in that part of the kernel and different ways you can do that. And eventually that API, the kernel container support, just got good enough that we could realistically do some production quality application framework. And that just fell out of that.
One thought that just came into my mind is that if I install 20 apps, let's say that they all depend on Python version 2.7. And so then I'll have 22.7 install and I do an upgrade. So then I have to upgrade all the packages one by one.
Well, first of all, Python would normally come from the runtime. So if all the apps were using the same runtime, they would only you'd only need to upgrade the runtime, and all the apps would automatically get the new version. It may be that some apps are using the KE runtime and some are using the GNOME one, but both of those are sharing the base runtime. So once that gets updated and both the GNOME and KDE gets rebased on top of the new one, you get to update the KDE and the GNOME one. But due to the way we store files and the way we manage updates of files, you would only download the file once.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the OS tree magic coming in there, deduplicating.
So OS tree would deduplicate any file that is. So it's basically like a Git repository. We checksum every file, and if you have the file with a particular checksum already locally, there's no need to download it again. We just use that.
But that only applies to the runtimes, I guess. So if you have multiple applications that package the same library, because they happen to use it and it's not in the runtime, that would not be deduplicated.
It would be if two apps install something that share a file that is identical, if two apps package the same library and the library contains a PNG, for instance, something that would be guaranteed to be identical when you install it, then that file would be shared between apps.
It actually deduplicates.
Even if they're completely unrelated, it's just a checksum of the file. However, if they build the same library, then it depends. It depends on the exact. If you're lucky, then it will produce the same binary. And then it will be shared.
I mean, then you end up in the whole reproducible build.
We do try to make builds reproducible. It helps that we share the entire SDK, so you're guaranteed to use the same compiler, the same linker, the same version of the libraries and whatnot. But it depends on what configure arguments you passed in, and we do try to feed in various things that affects reproducibility. this magic timestamp value, standardized things you can pass in to get reproducible builds. We try to do these things. So maybe you get the same binary, maybe not. If you get the same binary, it will be shared. And it's interesting, in OS3, like, it's shared when we download it. Like, whenever we're downloading a file, we know what checksum we're getting. So if it's already locally available, there's no need to get it. But also when it's used by an application, it's only stored once on disk. And all the sharing is done using hard links and read-only bind mounts. So it actually will only be once in page cache also. So
that's nice.
Even if you have multiple apps running with different runtimes that happen to use the same base runtime, there will only be one copy of libc in page cache.
Wow, cool. I guess somebody, that is me, ought to have made better preparations for this one. Okay, this is cool. I need to read up a lot. And I get the impression that we're being a bit too nasty with you, but please bear with us. No. How small devices, or how small is the device you can put this in? So basically what I'm saying, what are the minimal requirements?
Well, the distribution or the runtimes we're using are kind of large. I think they're about 200 megs or so. If you're using those, that's the kind of size you're targeting, which is fine if you're ever thinking about, you know, running on a laptop or something. But there's nothing fundamentally limiting you to using those runtimes. If you're creating your own runtime, it could be arbitrary small. And the requirements in terms of, you know, code that runs or memory that's used is really very small. I don't offhand know the size of the Flatpak binary dependency set, but I would be surprised if it was more than like a megabyte or so.
This is just a small C binary, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and then it's all about what kind of app are you running? How large is the app? How large are the dependencies? We tend to err to adding more to the runtime, because the more we have in the runtime, the easier it is for end user, like end developers, to create their apps without having to bundle all the things. But it's always like a give and take between not wanting the runtime to be bloated and not wanting everyone to maintain every library as a bundle thing.
It's the distro problem again.
Yeah. and also the focus on desktop means that, you know, there are naturally a bunch of things in there that are large-ish. Like there's a OpenGL implementation, there's an X library, Wayland libraries. All the dependencies that just fall out of being a like cute. There's probably like an HTML widget in there, either the GTK or the cute one. So the naturally kind of large set of dependencies.
I mean, Qt WebKit is the first thing that I couldn't build on a 32-bit machine because the linking stage couldn't go through. So yeah, then you end up with big stuff. But I mean, how does the current adoption look? You see it quite a lot. I do run some things in it just because it wasn't packaged by the master distro.
Yeah, I think it's slowly getting a lot of users. Woo!
Yay!
The infamous signal.
I have a bet with my daughter. She thinks I can get embarrassed by a ringtone. It doesn't work when you're past 40.
Yeah, we're not embarrassed anymore. It's just there's just the stats page for Flattop that lists. So we have around 1,100 apps now on Flattop. App downloads around 300,000 a day or something.
Wow!
Ooh, cool.
So it's getting there. I mean,
these are 1,100 apps. So if you were to compare it to packages in a distro, it's a completely different number, because number one, it hasn't been split, and these are not the libraries, it's the end user applications.
Yeah, these are like graphical applications, leaf package, if you say.
Yeah.
Do you mark them as free and open source software versus like proprietary?
We don't. There is some, like, you can list the license and we list them on the web page.
Mm-hmm.
But we do not hardcore track it. We actually have saying it's a plans kind of implies that we're currently working on it, but we have people interested in having it split so that you can tag certain apps as being fully free, and then we will expose a filtered version of FlatHub, like a free hub, or that's what we sometimes call it, where you would see only the filtered one, like the virtual RMS style version of the repository. And some work has happened on the back end to allow that to happen. It's not currently finalized, but long term, that's what we want to have.
Do you see discussions there? Because I mean, that's one of the potentially controversial topics, which is great that you and Red Hat are doing it, because nobody would question your sort of open source ethics. But the what you actually enable is to make it a lot easier to actually build binary only distributed software as well, as a consequence of what you're doing to simplify life.
I wouldn't say I do that. I'm just making it easy to distribute a software, and that's regardless of the license or anything. It's just the fact that it was really hard before affected free software as much as non-free software. But yeah, given that it distributions don't package non-free software, and that was the only way realistic to get things to users, it does make like non-free or non-open source binaries easy to produce or distribute. I don't think that's necessarily a huge issue. I mean, you could always get non-free RPMs or non-free devs. That works as well. You know, you can set up a app.
Yeah, it's just chunkier for everyone, developer and users, so to speak. It's always hit and miss. I mean, I'm a Debian user, for instance, and you always get the Ubuntu style stuff, so you never know. It kind of works mostly. That's always the experience.
I guess the primary difference is the fact that our main repository isn't split up by default.
Yeah,
and it's more like we plan to make a split up version of it or a filtered version of it, but the main product is the combined repository.
Yeah. But do you have any sort of proprietary or non-open contents now on FlatHub? Is it something that
we have Skype and Spotify, which are
yes.
a few of them. They're freely distributable, but it's not free software.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we have Steam there, and that's very much, well, I guess partially free, but
yeah, but it's very much, I mean, it's a proprietary thing.
Yeah. And I think, I guess, that's a bit more pragmatic approach than the hardcore distribution method, because a lot of the stuff that people use FlatHub for is the kind of stuff that isn't in the distros. So it is more important for us to be able to ship these things than it is for a distro, I guess.
Yeah.
Given your 20 years at Red Hat, and it sounds as if the main focus has been on the desktop, you must have one of the best like skills in looking into the future. So what do you see in the desktop for the coming years?
When is the year of the Linux desktop?
Yeah,
The year of the Linux desktop?
I think 1999 or something. That's where I started using Linux as my primary desktop. But I don't know. I think the whole that yoke is getting a bit old, because the desktop is just not that interesting anymore. I mean, it used to be that a laptop or a desktop machine is the primary thing you drive your apps with. And it just isn't anymore because you have phones and pads and other kinds of system. A lot of the stuff even that you do on a desktop or laptop is web-based. So the need for native application, or the existence of native applications is much more limited. And in fact, that kind of drives what kind of applications you're even able to do. A lot of the stuff that's interesting today that are web-based just isn't even possible to do as a desktop because they are collaboratively or social in a way that is really hard to do in a desktop.
So I was hoping to get some kind of fight between you and Yuan regarding GTK versus GT, but you're saying that none of them are important anymore.
Yeah.
It's all web.
Clearly, I'm in the pro GNOME camp being a GNOME developer, but I think actually, if you look at Reddit or something, you'd expect that the KDE developers and the GNOME developers to be like enemies or something, but that's just so far from the truth. We all work together, and we all, like, everyone works on stuff that they're interested in, but we still share an ecosystem. We still share a joy for computing, for Linux, for free software. We're not enemies in any way. Doesn't mean we like will just drop our thing that we spent the last 20 years to work on to work on someone else's. But you know, I'm not mad that someone chooses to spend their time doing work on something else.
I thought you were going to say some unwanted crap, but you didn't. That was nice. No, but I mean, we have the free desktop collaboration, I think, is a good sign of that there is a standardization work ongoing here between the desktops, and a lot of the infrastructure is shared, like the cgroup 2 APIs for launching desktop applications in let's call it isolation and not containers, because it's not all the way there.
And the standards for you know, launching applications, desktop files, app stream, XML, they're all called some metadata and interface things that are shared. But yeah, I mean, the UI toolkit might not be the same.
It's a matter of what kind of pain you like. Do you like template-based pain or boilerplate code type pain?
Yeah.
I actually did a very fun, it must have been in 2009, I did a fun experiment when I was with Nokia. I actually wrote a GTK header that was just defines and wrapper functions around Qt stuff, and ran all the examples from the GTK tutorial, because I mean it's all an abstraction of the X APIs. So I think it was around menu actions or something where the abstraction was a bit clunky. So you had to do the old void pass pointer and recasting back to find your footing again. But it's very similar.
Obviously, the C versus C++ part makes probably a larger difference than the actual widget API differences.
Yeah, I can actually share why I ended up where I ended up on the Qt side, and that's because the true 64 Unix workstation support for Qt was better in 1998 when I started university. I know I built both, and GTK didn't work on 64-bit systems back in the days.
Well, everything is that way. I mean, if you trace the advent of GNOME in GTK, it all ends up in people wanting to run the GIMP on their university machines, and it needed a license for Motif, which they didn't have, so they wrote their own library to do UI toolkits.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of fun. It's this little banana peels in life, and you slip in one direction.
Yeah. Yeah, so... yes, in the future, I see... Unfortunately, I see less desktop stuff. However, if you look at the current Linux desktops, all of them, they are amazing compared to what they used to be.
Yeah.
I mean, people complain all the time about changes, but like actually, if you try to use old stuff, it's pretty bad compared to what we have today.
It's so nice, and even for me, I like the slick. I am a GNOME user and has been for so many years. I like the slickness, but then again, I usually fire up a GNOME terminal in full screen mode. That's my working day. Yeah. So what do I need?
Yeah,
I mean, to be honest, what I feel has happened is that a lot of the corporate stuff that prevented me from being a full-time Linux desktop user has gone web. So, I mean, you have Outlook and Exchange and all that stuff sitting in the browser now, which actually means that you can live in Linux land. Oh, welcome, another speaker. Yeah, I read up on your profile in a really old interview, and you said you were a cat person, so that's confirmed now.
Yeah. We have two cats.
The quality of the desktop software in Linux is really there now. I mean, it's I do some Blender and Kdenlive stuff for fun on the side, and I mean the tooling is mature now. It's very useful.
This is actually kind of funny. I started using free and open source software for some like ethical reasons. I thought it was a good thing. I still think. But now I'm using it because I think it's way better. It's way more flexible. And that wasn't the case in the early years.
Yeah, I mean, especially if you, as you said, if you was working on a computer, there was always the set of Windows apps that you have to use internally. But all that tooling turned into web stuff. And then you're basically free to do whatever. As long as there's a Chrome or Firefox, you can run it.
That's why you need to start topping to other ISAs now. So I got myself a Pinebook, and that felt like a good old time. Some distro hopping, some building some kernels, fighting with drivers, feeling like a young engineer again.
Those were the days.
Waiting
all night for building a new kernel.
Yeah, I still remember when I ran Gentoo and did Emerge KDE, and then you could go do something else for 2 days or something.
Yeah. I'm not sure those were better days, but they were fun.
We were young.
Yeah, we had time. Nothing better to do.
Exactly.
No, but it's, okay. I guess it's time to wrap this session up.
Yeah, I think it's been fun. Thank you for telling us about Flatpak. Learned a lot.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and then a small news tidbit, actually, where we're planning to run FOSS North end of May this year. So when this episode is up, there will be a landing page online as well for the event.
Will it be virtual?
It depends on the whole Corona thing. Most conferences start in October in Sweden, at least in Western Sweden. We checked the calendars with a business suite in Gothenburg. So we said that we try to be early. If it works, it works. If we can be outdoors, it works. But it might be virtual as well. That will be decided, I think, mid-April something, depending on the contract terms with the venue, how late we can cancel, basically.
I think this is good. We started the recording with talking about the cat command, and now you have a cat in your lap. So I think that concludes today. So thanks a lot. See you again.
Thank you. See you.